a feminist criticism of exchange. Our sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. And this is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
This is Radio Free Thinker with Bob Dylan, and times, they are changing.
Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming, or you'll sink like a stone, for the times they are a-changing. Some writers and critics who prophesize with your pen, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin, and there's no telling who that it's naming. 'Cause the loser now will be later to win, for the times they are a-changing. Senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't lock up the hall, or he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled.
Hello and welcome to Radio Free Thinker on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. My name is Ethan, your free thinking historian.
And I'm Don, your philosopher, political science voice.
I'm Rob, cognitive psychologist, and that song is giving me flashbacks to the opening sequence of Watchmen. Anyone seen that movie?
Pretty good.
It's really awesome.
Pretty good movie.
I've been waiting to get my demo version from the interweb.
Yes, demo version.
Right. Well, what's going on in the world of science, Rob?
I hear that big story you told us about last week turned out to be not quite as big as they had all hoped.
Yes, it was a bit of a fizzle. So last week I told everyone to go outside and look at as NASA blows up the moon. It's actually the L-Cross mission, which was crash landing a spent fuel rocket
thingy.
Yeah, to create this plume of stuff from the mantle on a crater of the moon, so that they could look and see if there was ice or some other form of water. Unfortunately, the plume was not as spectacular or large as they were hoping for. So they steered the spent rocket into the Cabeus A crater on the south pole of the moon, into a shadowed zone of the crater where it was difficult to see anything within the shadow of the crater, and they were hoping that the plume would shoot out of it, and that, you know, anything would be lit up by the sun. As they piloted the second part of the L-Cross lander through the plume to take images and spectrographs, unfortunately, the plume did not go up. So they're speculating that the surface of the crater was harder and less deep than they were hoping for. But they're still analyzing the data, and we'll see if anything came out of it.
From what I understand is that the spectrum, they still may be able to get spectrographical information out of it, because that, just based on the light, you don't really need the plume. It would be better with the plume, but they still might get something from just looking at the light that may have changed because of it. Because they know it definitely hit.
Yeah.
They have a crater. They know it's there.
So it's not a tremendous waste of money, only maybe a little bit of a waste of money.
there were some people that were quite angry that NASA was bombing the moon, as they said. There was someone, I remember reading some psychic or astrologer or something bitching about how we didn't ask the moon if we were allowed to violate her. Zini Jardin, who is one of the founders of Boing Boing, has been tweeting and blogging about how we shouldn't bomb the moon for water And the only reason we're doing it is because we're treating our own planet and wasting our own water so badly.
You know what I think is the best one is everyone has noticed that since they did this lacrosse mission, no one has seen J.W. Bush, that he's gone, and I bet you.
He was on that mission. No, he's in his ranch, just like he always was. There's another astronomical story in the news this week. A new ring was discovered around Saturn. It's an array of dark dust and ice particles that is normally invisible within the visible light spectrum. And no one really noticed it before until they pointed an infrared, the Spitzer telescope, that way. And now they see this massive ring that starts about 6 kilometers outside of Saturn's surface and extends a little further. Basically in the exact same plane and line as the orbiting moon Phoebe. And this actually solves something of a rather old mystery, which is that there is another moon orbiting Saturn, which goes in the opposite direction to most of the other moons on it.
So everything goes clockwise, but this one moon goes counterclockwise.
Or the other way.
Yeah.
And it's called the Iapetus. And on one side of it, it has this sort of dark dust stain looking thing on the leading side of the planet. And people were wondering why this should be. And what they're speculating is that because this ring of particles and dust is in the same plane as Phoebe, is that Phoebe is losing these particles, creating this massive ring. And when Iapetus goes through the ring, it sort of picks up the dust on its leading edge, much like a car would pick up bugs on its windshield.
Cool, so it needs a huge windshield wiper.
Yes.
That's his next project.
I was just thinking, there's a good Marxist interpretation of all this, about how, you have one planet that has all the rings, big, huge, gaudy rings, and then it's got a few bigger ones that are the muscle that have a few little tiny rings like Saturn and Neptune, and then all the poor little peon planets that just work hard just to make it through every day.
I'm sure the solar system is deliberately Marxist-Leninist.
Right.
Actually, there was another study in the news. This just came to mind. I didn't actually have this prepared, so I don't know if I'm quoting this accurately, but some group of scientists were looking for the genetic diversity of populations of insects on the East Coast. So what they did was they got cars to drive along the long highways. One went from somewhere in Maine to Newfoundland, I think. And they basically scraped off the windshield and measured the genetic diversity of the bugs that got splattered on the windshield.
Cool.
It was a clever way of collecting data.
Of course, it might just show you the difference between the smart bugs and the dumb bugs. The dumb bugs, of course, crossing the road to see what's on the other side, and the smart one saying, I ain't going there.
But actually, more in line with the astronomical stories we had at the beginning, there's been a lot of talk recently about, the Mayan calendar coming to an end and the apocalypse at in December 2012. Lots of people talking, 12/21, 2012, the end of the world, it's the end of the Mayan calendar. Well, actually, there's a story out of The Guardian and Associated Press that people went and interviewed some Mayans and Mayan Indian elders on the Yucatan Peninsula. And, here's a quote from one of them. Definitely not, the Mayan Indian elder insists. I came back from England last year, and man, they had me fed up with this stuff. There's this astronomer who runs a website called Curious Ask an Astronomer. And here's a quote. It's too bad that we're getting emails from fourth graders who are saying that they're too young to die. We had a mother of two young children who was afraid she wouldn't live to see them grow up. Chile Pictun, a Guatemalan, says the doomsday theories spring from Western, not Mayan ideas. So the idea is that there's all these, the Mayan calendar has each year, which is roughly 300...
The Mayan calendar has a lot of cycles, and there's different calendars have different cycles,
but the
big-ass calendar has this, what is it?
13 baktuns, which are roughly equivalent to years, and the end of the 13th baktun comes around December 2012. And people are saying that the Mayans believe that some god would come down from the heavens and everything would be ended. But actually, when we ask our archaeologists and actual Mayans and people who know the traditions, they found that, no, this is nothing to do with actual Mayan tradition, and that the one carving that a lot of people quote as saying this, it's actually cut off at the end, and it suggests that something will happen, but no one actually knows for sure. However, there is a very large industry of books and television shows and a movie that's coming out later this month that are capitalizing on the idea that 2012 is the end of times.
And, of course, the real reason why the calendar cut off is funding was cut for the artists. Right? Actually, you know, it's funny, right? And this is a case where a new segment, Prove Me Wrong. Dan Brown in The Lost Symbol, yes, I'm sorry, I read The Lost Symbol, says that apocalypse actually means the unveiling. It's not actually the end of the world. It's the unveiling. Something's going to happen. So even if you do believe in the apocalypse, it might not be a bad thing. It could be a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the point is we should not bother the Mayans with very old, very scary prophecies. Why don't we take a quick commercial break, and we'll come back with some more on Radio Freethinker.
Regulations här. Du lyssnar på CITR 109.9 FM in Vancouver, BC, Canada.
And we're back on Radio Freethinker. So let's segue into our next segment here, which revolves around the Shroud of Turin.
And more importantly, religious relics. Ethan brought up something, a little tidbit he had about the Shroud of Turin. I was thinking, well, you know, Shroud of Turin is just one of a big plethora of things called religious relics, in particular Catholic relics. And so I thought I'd do a little research into it. And apparently, there's a lot of justification for religious relics, and religious relics are venerated objects. And they have a classification system. A first-class relic is an item that is directly associated with the events of Christ's life, i.e. something to do with his body, the crucifixion, or something like that, or the physical remains, i.e. body parts, of a saint. Second-class relic items, which of course are good, but they're not as good as the first class, so they get back in the uncomfortable seats and the poor meals.
B-movies.
These are items worn by the saint. So, glove, shirt, yada yada. Third-class relics, the seats on the wings of the plane, these are things that aren't actually anything to do with a saint or Jesus at all, but they got close to something that was close to something of the Christ or the saints, whatever.
Amusingly, I'm just thinking about how as you go, you know, down the levels, they become a lot easier to fake.
Well, you know, and that's where it comes in. I mean, above and beyond getting into the whole idea of relics themselves, one of the reasons why there's this huge plethora of relics, and they come and go in fads, is relics was a major industry, especially in the early Dark Ages, Middle Ages. For any little town, if you were slow, if business wasn't good, you'd find yourself a relic, and not all of them were dishonest. Some of them may have honestly thought they had a piece of the cross, or, hey, this is the foreskin of Christ, so, hey, let's set up a little kiosk and market and try and sell this thing, right?
Well, exactly, and it actually drove a kind of a minor business. You would have churches or cities that had a relic, which would draw pilgrimages from all over Europe, and so the pilgrim's route would draw their own relics. So you would have basically trade routes forming up where religious relics and religious icons would be traded and sold and stolen and pop up in different cities. Sometimes you'd have the same relic popping up in different cities.
So it was pretty big business.
It was very big business.
There was even a double side to that. I mean, one of the things about the Christian church is supposed to be a public, you know, like you come out, but it's a personal Christ. Sorry, personal relationship. So you'd have these relics, and there was the big industry, but you'd also have the little souvenir shops where you could take a bit of the cross home. And instead of going to Rome to worship there, you can just go into your back room and bring out this little special relic you had, and somehow feel closer to the Lord himself. And seeing as it was all in your mind, I guess maybe that was true.
Well, also quite interesting is no matter where you were in Europe, you were never very far away from Mary's mother milk, which was a very common relic, although she had to be, you know, pretty productive considering how much milk was available. But it does lead to some interesting questions because The way relics worked is they were often very fad, like they were fashionable. And some cities or some cathedrals would have one, and it would kind of be exciting for a while. Then it would go out of style, and, you know, pilgrims would look for a different, you know, place to go and worship. And, of course, you know, Rome, Constantinople, Jerusalem was always pretty big ones, but you had, like, Canterbury in England, you had various places in Spain, and it was a business. It was... The church profited off this. And as Don mentioned, this was a Catholic thing. In fact, the Protestant Reformation really took off because, you know, as Luther and many other Protestants they felt this was completely dishonest, completely ridiculous, and absolutely offensive.
And part of it was the sort of overwhelming, like really ridiculous, lavish decorations and money that were spent on churches and relics in particular. I mean, I remember seeing some when I was traveling Europe, you know, a saint's severed finger sitting on top of a gold pillow inside of a cabinet that was, you know, filigreed, and it was ridiculous.
Exactly. And the Shroud of Turin is exactly one of these things.
One of the more famous
For those
relics.
Of you who don't know, like the Shroud of Turin is a cloak. It supposedly got Jesus's image on it. Supposedly he wore it himself. And
it's supposed to be in blood or something like that?
Blood, or? And it's kind of ripped, and it looks old, and it's very impressive. Well, recently, an Italian scientist named Luigi Garschali has reproduced the Shroud of Turin, proving that the original is a fake. He used medieval chemicals.
Yeah, he used technology and pigments that were available at the time in the area where it supposedly arose. And basically, he used a mask and some mildly acidic pigments, and he, you know, had some grad student wear the mask, laid it into the pigments, and laid it onto this linen cloth. And then I think he baked it in an oven for some time to age it. And there you go. It was almost indistinguishable from the actual.
Let's remember our skeptic hat. So it hasn't proven that it was. It just has now shown it can be done. Because
it's consistent with a fake.
Exactly. One of the big things that was a problem with the Shroud of Turin is that they've done things. They even did carbon-14 dating, right?
Yes, in the 80s, they did carbon dating and found that it dated from a medieval era.
Actually, the funny thing is, this Italian scientist didn't prove anything. It was already proved a fake when they carbon dated it to 1260, and that's clearly not old enough.
I get to bring up something my co-host didn't know, because apparently one of the problems with the carbon dating is that there was bacterial contamination. The way they did it in the 80s has changed a lot since they do it today.
Yeah.
Now that means it's inaccurate, and of course, if you're a true believer, you grab a hold of that and you run for all your life. But even if it is inaccurate, and this is, of course, why my colleagues aren't wrong, is even if it is contaminated with this bacteria, it might be out by a couple decades. It's probably out by a few decades, maybe a century. Highly, highly improbable it's out by a millennium.
Yeah. And the fact that this new evidence comes up that it was possible to fake it using available technology at the time just casts a little more doubt on its authenticity.
Of course, if you're a true believer, this is not going to convince you one iota.
Well, one of the other evidences that they have, apparently they have, is that they've looked at the stains, and some people have said it's blood stains. In fact, it's so well preserved that they can tell you the blood type, AB blood type. But there's a problem with that. Apparently, and this was new for me doing my research for the show, was there were no people around with AB negative blood prior to 700 AD. So even if
well, no, it's a miracle. Yeah, no, Jesus had AB blood before it even existed.
Apparently, AB negative blood arose from the migration or invasion of Mongolian type people in the early 700s. AD and all that, into Europe, where Europe, everyone was A, type A, everyone in Mongol was type B, the intermarriage, etc., created AB.
So Jesus was a Mongol?
Jesus probably wasn't a white dude.
Actually, in double sense, because you'd have to be a mixed
mixed origin.
Yes.
Faking relics wasn't entirely an uncommon practice at the time, as far as I understand. That there were.
Well, no. I mean, it was big business, as we said. It was also had some really practical applications, and I'll tell you guys an amusing anecdote that I remember from my days of studying medieval history. During the Crusades, there was a Christian army that was entrapped in a castle. I can't remember if it was Jerusalem or possibly Antioch, but they were surrounded. Things looked pretty grim. You know, a few days and it was going to be over. One of the knights found the Spear of Destiny, the spear that supposedly pierced Christ's side, in the basement, rallied the troops, fantastic victory. Problem is, there already was one in Rome, and Paris, and Constantinople, and probably Jerusalem too. So
you mean another miracle?
Apparently, the spear
they
multiplies.
Fishes and loaves, and they've done the same thing with spears.
The funny, the interesting aspect to this is the way the Catholic Church kind of treats relics, even ones that have like multiple copies. They never really come out and say that one's real, this one isn't. They always kind of go, well, they're sort of both real.
Well, see, the funny thing is you don't worship relics. They're really particular about this, because if you worship the relic,
you're worshiping an idol.
Then you're worshiping an idol. So you venerate it, and through the grace of God, these things can have their spooky, spooky powers. You're mentioning an anecdote. I don't know why this struck me as funny, but one of the things, one of the earliest references to relics, was in Kings 13:20-21, where they had this guy had died. Right, and there were raiders coming in, and they every spring they came in and they raided, and there were these Israelites, they were burying a guy, right, because he died obviously, and raiders came, and the first thing that came into their mind wasn't to run away, as I would, but was to hide the body. So they hide the body, throw it into the tomb of some guy named Elisha. When the body hit Elisha's bones, he woke up and said, "Hey, what the hell am I doing here?" But sorry, I'm just envisioning. You're sitting there and you're digging, and the Mongol horde comes over the hill, and the first thing you do is you clean up the worksite.
Well, speaking of bringing the dead back to life and venerating old relics, stay with us, and we'll return.
The CRTC is asking the public for comments as part of a nationwide review of campus and community radio. That review includes this station. We're asking that you let the CRTC know what local, nonprofit, volunteer-driven radio means to you and your community. Maybe you're a fan of community radio. Maybe you've donated. Or maybe you're a volunteer. Then please write to the CRTC and make sure you tell them you support the idea of stable funding for the sector. To submit your comments, visit the website crtc.notlong.com and look for review number 418, the review of campus and community radio. The last day for comments is Friday, October 16th.
And welcome back to Radio Free Thinker. So, as Rob alluded to, we're going to be talking about an interesting case going on in Russia right now. Joseph Stalin's grandson, Rob, say his name.
Oh, let's see. It was just reading off this paper here. Yevgeny Dugashvili.
Yeah, that guy. has sued a Russian newspaper, which I'm just going to try this one, Novaya Gazeta.
Novaya Gazeta. It means new paper, I believe.
Excellent. Well, is suing this paper because they allege that Stalin personally ordered the deaths of Soviet citizens and actually referred to Stalin as a bloodthirsty cannibal. And so he decided to sue.
Strong words.
Yeah, sue this newspaper for basically, defamation. Defamation of his character and his family history. Now, the Soviet documents that are the main piece of evidence that we have here were released in the 1990s. And basically, they are quite clear. They do indicate that millions of people were deported to the gulag. Stalin was a paranoid nutcase and murdered a lot of people.
But he had a neat mustache.
Oh, yeah. He was quite the paranoid guy. And the thing is, though, he was at the same time portrayed as a national hero. And there's been a lot of movements in Russia in the past, 5 years to kind of recast Stalin as this national hero. And the concern to me was that, well, this is going to go to court. It should be, thrown out immediately. But, what if this sort of nationalism, this sort of nostalgia for the past takes hold of the story? And it kind of has.
Actually, you're too late on that.
Exactly.
You may have noticed you said about 5 years ago, or actually it's probably closer to about 7 or 10 years when Putin took over.
Yes.
One of the things Putin has done, after the breakup of the Soviet Union and Russia, you had the troubled times of Russia where the oligarchies took over a lot of industry, and you had these super, super rich people who really controlled Russia. And what one thing Putin has been trying to do since to reassert Russian nationalism is to try and get rid of these auxiliary power bases. And he's been going at all of these oligarchs. And one of them happens to be the owner of this newspaper. And he's thrown other people in jail. He's had other people exiled. So I think a lot of this behind this is to, one, get rid of a political enemy. And two, as you point out, because the shock treatment that Russia had went to, they're sitting back and they're saying, maybe things weren't great during communism, but it's sure a heck of a lot better than what we've had right now. And do you remember when Stalin was in power? We were feared. We were a superpower. The United States sat down and they listened to what we had to say. Not like now, where we have to kind of beg and scrimp. So you're right. In the Soviet Union, not only do you get the resurgence of Stalinism, but you also get forms of neo-Nazi, neo-nationalism, which are also being reasserted. I mean, if you happen to be a Chechen in Russia right now, it's worse than being a black person in the southern states in the turn of the last century.
It is quite troubling, the recent developments. Although, maybe this is a ray of light, the ruling came down just today, actually, and the case has been thrown out. There hasn't been an official statement as to why yet. That's coming in the next few days, hopefully. But already, they're dismissing this. Stalin's grandson has stated the judge was clearly biased, and that the main claims have been ignored. He has basically called into question all the evidence as being propaganda by anti-Soviets to tarnish Russia's noble reputation, which is kind of similar to, you know, other sort of pseudo-histories like Holocaust denial and Knights Templar and all that kind of stuff. He's even questioned the Soviet-Nazi Pact of 1939. And he even made a rather interesting claim that Stalin, quote, was our country's first Democrat, end quote. So,
for a certain definition of democracy, I suppose.
Well, yes, but let's face it, the United States have a democracy too, and well,
it's really a republic.
No, actually, you know, I was thinking there's a sideline to this, right? What if one of the relatives of Hitler makes a similar kind of lawsuit? So you can't say Stalin was one of the most evil people of the history, and then you can't say Hitler was one of the most people. Who are you going to point out as one of the worst people in the 20th century?
This is going to destroy at least, you know, 50% of all jokes.
I don't think that's going to happen, Rob, because the descendants of Hitler have changed their name, which I can understand. I don't think Hitler would be very common usage in Germany at the moment. But, I mean, it is kind of, I think, interesting that you see here's the birthing of a new conspiracy theory, because as Stalin's grandson and his team of lawyers are basically stating that anyone who disagrees with us is part of the conspiracy to tarnish Russia's reputation. And, you know, it's just starting up right here in Russia. You know, this is the foundation, you know.
Well, you know, it also goes on the whole idea of history deniers, if I can use that blanket term. People who take a revisionist view of history and do so in a, I'm going to say it in almost like a religious sense of the word. They look at it and they ignore the facts and they only see what they want to see, and they pick and choose whatever they want when they go back. In fact, that would be a good topic to talk about, people who deny histories, maybe on a future show about...
Well, interesting you should mention future shows.
We have a special coming up, an hour-long special on Sunday at 8.
October 18th. We'll be filling in for Rhythms India, and one of our main topics will be Holocaust denial. So I encourage you to tune in for that. Well, we're running out of time, so why don't we go to our final segment on what's going on in the skeptical world? What are we recommending our listeners take a look at?
Well, my skeptic highlight for the week, actually, is something that I read about the other day, is about Israel's denunciation of war crimes. I mean, they're doing it for very political reasons, but I was thinking of all the countries in the world that should have war crimes are important, crimes against humanity are important. Israel should be the one because of what happened with the Holocaust and all that. But just recently they've come out and they've said, one, we never did war crimes, which is okay, you're allowed to deny it. Two, our people cannot be subject to any war crimes.
That's
and three,
a little.
The whole idea of war crimes in this context somehow seems wrong. But yeah, no, it's like, you know, everyone else can be a war criminal, but not us. But then, I mean, it makes sense. They are the chosen people. So I just think this is interesting. And there's a lot of repercussions going on with the Palestinians. Apparently Hamas has been pressured by the United States and Israel to go along with this denunciation of war crimes. Apparently the UN was going to do a vote on it to forward an investigation into war crimes done by Israel in their invasion of the Gaza Strip just a little while ago, and that apparently is falling on deaf ears now. So that's my thing. Look into it, and you'll find out more about what's going on in the world and two sides of a very particular issue.
I'm just reminding everyone that tonight is Skeptics in the Pub, so if you're listening live, come join us at the Railway Club tonight at
7:30.
My sort of event that I want to promote is... Interesting Vancouver. It's a conference set up by locals for people, and it'll be on October 23rd at, I think, the Yacht Club or that area in Stanley Park. And it's basically local people that have interesting things to say and do interesting things, and they're going to be giving presentations to people and talking. And it's a place for people who like interesting things to talk to each other.
Well, interesting things are good.
Yes. Interesting.
I find them young. You took the pun
I
right
saw
out of
where
my...
you were going with that.
Okay, well, I also want to remind our listeners, please check out our webpage at www.radiofreethinker.com. And if you have any comments, criticisms, or positive things to say, please let us know at radio.freethinker@gmail.com. And we encourage all our listeners to please offer us some great feedback or criticism as well. It's acceptable, too.
Constructive and kind.
Yes, yes, that's good, too. Well, why don't we
Well, there's one last thing we can leave on the show if you want. You guys heard about Obama?
Oh, yeah.
And he won the
Nobel president.
He won the Nobel Prize. And I think the Nobel Prize nomination period was closed in...
February 1st was the deadline. So he wasn't even president for, like, what, two, maybe 3 weeks at that? And they said, he is the most powerful force for peace in this universe this year. And I don't know, Lech Wałęsa, who has a special relationship with Rob here because of his origins.
Lech Wałęsa being the Polish founder of the Solidarity Movement.
And one of the leading lights that led to the freedom of Poland over its, what I would call dictatorial communists, love communists, but then all the governments were good. Yes. Poland was under. But anyhow, he won the Peace Prize in 83. And he said, and I quote, "So soon? This is too soon. He has not yet made real input." Which, quite frankly, is true.
When he said it, it probably had a Polish accent.
Well, we encourage our listeners to write in about that, too. So, this is Ethan, your free-thinking historian, saying goodnight.
This is Don saying, eyes open, minds on.
And this is Rob saying, see you at Skeptics in the Pub tonight. Good night.
Then there's the utter misery that is college radio, where they apparently just let any bewildered freshman wander into the booth and try to run a radio station. Campus Outreach is looking for... Hang on. College radio can pretty much be summed up in five words.
CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Conscious rap failed us.
Abraham's are shuffling the raisin bran and eyeballs to bylaws are leaping off the laser scan until your genotype and telling you to deep a pipe if you don't do it well. These hosts might the random carpenter code fills the deficit in motor skills of onlookers. Raw sugars register an overkill within your colon wall, so I can't eat bowling ball. You squeeze out at the open call, but when if you could inundate the open hearing with your shrewd barbs that perforate the slogan nearing on the cue cards when you press a fine cut or just apply blushes, beast growth, seek help, and if lean and pie crust, the job offers for Albanese account Dracula and calorie account spatula, kitchen sapper and the lithograph on your Calvin Klein alkaline and rich gonad. Should I kiss your ass or drown you in the saffron soy dip above my Saxon joystick and poke at my glitter speckled tight jumpsuit, Mr. Applewhite grunt cute from the candlelight drunk selling some suit, being a fresh faced unknown with sophomore gags and washboard abs fighting cineplex waste bled sounds. Can I be OG Mudbone? Go free and plant the phone.
Poppies, undefeated, screaming fancy copies, love for the leaf it are pumping antibodies into DP's cleavage. They split it, the Ethan and Measles Swampies, undefeated, screaming fancy copies, love for the leaf it are pumping antibodies into DP's cleavage. They split it.